All right, Javosai, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Samech Aleph, 161. We are picking up on Kuf Samech Amud Beis, 160b, and we're picking up at Heichan Edim Chosmin. We have a little bit to do today. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 lines up from the bottom. So it says, you know, we had a little bit of fun yesterday at the end of the parish. All right, we'll catch up today. So we'll say our share this morning is sponsored by Alan Wiseman, in memory of his mother-in-law, Mildred Newman, Malka Bas Yisrael Usher. We hope the merit of our Talmud Torah from the Shem will have an aliyah. Shkoach, Alan, thank you. So we'll say, let's continue. So we, very exciting parak of Get Pashut. So we're discussing the distinction specifically between a Get Mekusher and a Get Pashut. So far the distinctions we've seen is that, number one, a get pashut, which represents a basic document. And again, remember, we ended off yesterday with the interesting idea that the origin, the genesis of this get mekusher was from where? From the Kohanim. We ended off again, because again, the Gemara says, Kohanim Ragzaninin, who the Kohanim are shorter fuse, and therefore in order to go ahead and create a little bit of a delay in the divorce process, so Chazal instituted this particular type of get that would just simply take a little bit more time. There's no greater esoteric reasoning to it. It just takes longer in the hope that in the interim, this additional time, they would calm down a little bit. It would offer a cooling down period. We then ended off with Tosis, who discussed the idea, so what does this mean? Does this mean that Kohanim can only use, it also is a very important yisod, because from the Gemara it sounds like one can make the argument that if a Kohen wants to divorce his wife, he must use a get mekusher. So in fact, Tosis says, but that leaves us with a problem. What's the problem? The problem is today, Tosis says today is 1,000 years ago, if Tosis is already 1,000 years ago, we're not really proficient in writing a get mekusher. So if I remember again, Tosis gave a couple of different answers, among them that Chazal only legislated this for a town of Kohanim, either a specific town or a specific group of particularly short-fused Kohanim. And for them, or Tosis says, no, Chazal never legislated that a Kohen has to use a get mekusher. Chazal just seems to say the Kohen has the ability, if he wants, to use a get mekusher. But Halacha Lemaisa, there's no obligation. So we left off with that. Now the Gemara jumps back into understanding the distinction. Heichan Edim Chosmin. So where do the Edim stand? I will say it's right across from Tosfos Ve'in Isav. So Heichan Edim Chosmin. So I will say, we understand, the Mishnah told us, that on a get pashut, which is just a regular document, so where do the Edim sign? Where do the Edim sign? Right under the text. You have text, signatures, Shalom Yisrael. What about on a get mekusher, where do the Edim sign? Heichan Edim Chosmin, Rav Huna Amar Ben Kesher LeKesher. So Rav Huna says, between the folds. Now I will say what that sounds like, and this is based on the Rashbam's understanding of the Mishnah, is that the way this is unfolding is like this. On a get mekusher, you have a line of text, blank line. Line of text, blank line of text, so on and so forth. Then you fold the shtar. Each of those blank slots becomes an opportunity for the aid to go ahead and sign. Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar, Achori haksav ukneged haksav. I will say now, it sounds like according to Rav Huna is saying that the Edim sign on the same side as the text. So they're signing on the same side on the text, in between the lines of text. Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba comes along and says, no, Achori haksav ukneged haksav. Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says that they sign on the back side of the shtar, opposite the text. Now what that means is, one could have thought perhaps on the other side of the shtar, underneath the text, in the same place where they would have signed, had they been affixing their signatures on the side of the text. Therefore, Rabbi says, no, they sign on the opposite side of the shtar, and opposite the text. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rabbi Bar Chama L'Rav Chisda. So Rabbi Bar Chama says, Rav Chisda. Rav Huna Do'amar Ben Kesher LeKesher. So what's according to Rav Huna, who says that you go ahead and you sign in between the lines. So the Gemara says, Kasaka Daiten, Ben Kesher LeKesher, Migavoy. So we assume that what that means about Sai is the following. That what is Rav Huna saying? You sign between the lines, but where? Migavoy. Migavoy means on the front of the document. So the way this works, as I just described before, line of text, empty line, line of text, empty line, and in each of those empty lines there is the signature of a witness. But says the Gemara, says Rabbi Bar Chama, there's a problem. Because after the whole, Hahu Mekusher, Dika'asa Lekamed Rebbe. We'll say there was a certain case of a get Mekusher that came before Rebbe. And what happens? Va'am Rebbe, Ein Zman Bazeh. And Rebbe said, there's no Zman, there's no date written in the second. So also we've discussed extensively the need for a date in a document, in a let's say in a business document, in a loan document, you need the date because the date creates the starting point for the shibud karkos, for the lien against property. Of course, again, for a divorce document, you need a date in order to know which as of which date the divorce is effective. So this get mekusha comes before Rebbe. Rebbe sees it, and he says there's no zman, there's no date in the get. Amrali Rabbi Shimon Berebi the Rebbe, so Rabbi Shimon, his son, was there, and he said to him, Shema ben Kisharov Muvla. Perhaps the date is in one of the folds. So we will see that the way they used to go ahead and do a get makusher is that, remember, it's this accordion style shtar, and after they finished it, what would they do? They would, not bunch it up is the wrong word, fold it up, and then they would sew it together. They would sew it together so that they would go ahead and, we'll say, by the way, Jesse, you also should know, this has, in certain respects, for regular gittin, this actually makes Kabbalah Saget a little bit easier. You know, the halacha is, by Kabbalah Saget, a woman has to receive the entirety of the get in her hands. There can't be any part of the get that extends outside of her hands for a variety of different reasons. So the beauty of the get makusher is that it folds up into a much smaller thing. So today, for example, when we give a get, what we do is we take the get, we actually fold it up into a much smaller square so that when the husband puts the get into the wife's hands, when she holds her hands, she could receive it in both of her hands as there's no extension. It's another benefit of the makusher. In any event, so Rebbe can't find this man, Rebbe can't find the date. Rabbi Shimon says, maybe it's muvla, maybe it's absorbed, or it's swallowed up, literally, into the folds. Sapalye, so they undid the shtar, or they undid like the stitching of the shtar that held it together. The chazye, and they saw that indeed the date was there. So says the Gemara, Rabbi, and I remember, Rabbi Bar Chama is asking on Rav Huna. Rav Huna said that the signatures of the witnesses is ben kesher le kesher, between literally each of the knots, but it means between each of the folds. We're assuming now that Rav Huna means that the witnesses are signing on the front end of the shtar, on the front where the text is. So v'im isa, if this is true that Rav Huna holds, that the witnesses sign on the actual side of the text, ein zman bazeh, v'ein eidim bazeh mibayleir. We'll say, when Rebbe looked at that shtar, what should have jumped out at him is, there's a lot more here that's missing than the zman. What else seems to be missing? The signatures of the witnesses as well. No. Do you think that Rav Huna meant that the witnesses signed between each of the knots, between each of the folds on the front end? Lo, bin kesher le kesher me avroi. Let's say Rav Huna holds the halacha lemaisa. Again, the witnesses are signing between each of the folds on the back. So I'll say, interestingly enough, what comes out over here, according to the Gemara, is that both Rav Huna and Rav Yirmiyahu Bar Arba are both agreeing that what? That on a get mekusher, the witnesses sign on the back side of the shtar, on the side opposite the text, not on the side of the text. The machlokes is the placement of the actual signatures. Rav Huna is going to say, Bein kesher lekesher, and Rav Yirmiyahu Bar Arba is going to say, Acharei aksav, again, we'll further define exactly what this means. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. They will say, if that's the case, see, here's the Shaila. If that's the case, then if you're having the witnesses sign on the back of the Shtar Bosai, it would seem to be that a get makusher is ripe for some type of forgery. Because what can you suppose on a regular shtar, a get pashut? So what's the beauty in the simplicity of the get pashut? What's the beauty in it? Text, signatures. Therefore what? You can't add anything. You can't add anything, right? Right? You see everything, you can't add anything. If you have a get makusher, if you're telling me now that according to everyone, the witnesses are standing on the back side of the shtar, so we'll say, what's to stop what? What's to stop someone? What's to stop one of the individuals from going ahead and just adding a few more lines of text on the shtar? To which the Gemara says, no. We'll say, at the end of a shtar, it says, sharir v'kayim. We'll say, sharir v'kayim means the details of this shtar have been upheld. So essentially, when you have that phrase, sharir v'kayim, that signals this is the end of the shtar. Therefore, if what? If you were to find more text underneath sharir v'kayim, you would know with absolute certainty that's what? That this is a forgery. To which the Gemara says, one second, Vahadir kasa shar v'kayim achrina. So I say, so why can't someone go ahead? It says shar v'kayim, then what? Add in more text and put in a second shar v'kayim. In other words, then maybe you could just say stylistically, it worked out nice to have a shar v'kayim here, a shar v'kayim here, and there's just some extra text in the middle, to which the Gemara is supposed to say, by the way, you should know, these are very important Gemaras, because it's from these Gemaras, it's from these sugyas, that the fundamentals of Hilchos Shtaros emerge, to which the Gemara tells us, Chad shar v'kayim kasvinon, Shrei shar v'kayim lo kasvinon. They both say because a shtar has only one shar v'kayim per shtar. You don't write shar v'kayim twice. Therefore, if you were to go ahead and what? If you were to go ahead and see a shtar that says shar v'kayim, text, and then a second shar v'kayim, you know with absolute certainty that that second block of text is a forgery. To which the Gemara says, v'leichosh, dilma mochik le l'shar v'kayim, v'kasev mai deboi, v'hadar kasev shar v'kayim. So why don't they say this? So we'll say, I can still forge a document if I want. It's very simple. Fine. You told me. So now we'll say, let's go through what we learned. We've learned a lot already in just 12 minutes. Right? So again, so number one, what have we established? We've established one that every shtar has to have a shar v'kayim. We'll say shar v'kayim is essentially code for, right? Shtar ends here. Shtar ends here. This is the end of the shtar. We're done. We've also established that number two, you can only have one sharir v'kayim per shtar. You can't have two shar v'kayims. Tush the Gemara says, but if somebody wants to forge a shtar, what could they do, Rabbo say? Just erase the first sharir v'kayim, put in the text, and then put put shar v'kayim at the end of that additional text, and you could go ahead and you could establish a forgery. To which the Gemara says, v'hadr kaz shar v'kayim, ha'am Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Ham Rabbi Yochanan, Tuluya Mikuyemes Kshera. We'll say this is actually very interesting. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Last Rashbam on the page. Omishani Ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan Tuluya Mikuyemes Kshera. Ta'a HaSofer. We'll say, let's say the Sofer makes a mistake on the Shtar. V'igia, V'higi, V'tala Teva Ushtayim Bein Shita L'Shita. V'achra King Kaima B'Sof HaShtar. Kemosha Nukosim Teva Plonis De'Benichiti Sharvakan. So we'll say, we're going to discuss this in greater depth on Amud Beis. What the Gemara is talking about here, Rabbi says, is the following. Let's say the sofer makes a mistake and has to add something in. So the halacha is that a sofer, and Rabbi, again, we'll discuss this in greater depth, a sofer can add something in being sheet to the shita. So he can make an insert. He can make an insert in between the lines. Now we'll discuss what he has to do at the end of the shtar in order to uphold that insert. So tuluya mikuyam shtar. So we'll say what tuluya means is an insert. The reason why he calls an insert a tuluya is why? Because often what would happen is an insert would be inserted between lines. So it would look like it was hanging off the text. So tuluya mikuyamas kshera, top of kuf samech aleph, machak pasul. Rabbi say at the end of the day, if there is an erasure in the shtar, it is puzzle. It is puzzle. So I must say, interestingly enough, inserts are fine. We'll see changes are fine if they are upheld, and we'll discuss how that happens. But erasures are puzzle. Va'af api shemakuyam. And even Rabbi say what? Now this is actually very interesting. Even if the erasure is upheld, in other words, even if you have a supporting note in the document that says this erasure was done by the sofer underneath the presence of the Edom, and the erasure was done for the following reasons, the erasure is still going to be possible. Now, when is that so? V'lo amru machak possible. We will see. There are times when you are permitted to erase something in the shtar. A sofer is writing a shtar and he makes a mistake, even before the shtar is complete. So he wants to erase it and go back. So we'll discuss how that's done. When do we see, Rabbi Osai, that an erasure is going to be possible? Second line down. Ella b'makom sharir v'kayim. Ah. I will say, when is an erasure always going to be puzzle? An erasure is going to be puzzle when it's done in the place where it would have said sharir v'kayim. We'll say that's where our antenna go up. That's where we get a little bit nervous when somebody's tampering with sharir v'kayim, ukashir sharir v'kayim. So I will say, listen to this. If you see a shtar, and the shtar has an erasure where in the place where it would have said sharir v'kayim. And the size of the erasure is exactly the size of the text where it could have said what? Sharir v'kayim. That's where antenna go up and say something does not look right in this particular shtar. So the Gemara says the following. So we'll say, here's what we've established. According to Rav Huna, according to Rav Huna. So Edim are signing. Rav Huna's lashon is Bein kesher lekesher, between one fold to the next fold, between one knot to the next knot. But again, we've established achori haksav, on the back side of the document. Okay, so that's Rav Huna. Ulrab Yirmiya Bar Abba, so we'll say third line down from the top. Ulrab Yirmiya Bar Abba, darmi achori haksav, ukineged haksav mi bachutz. Lechosh, so we'll say now, what does Rabbi Yirmiya say? Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba says, you sign opposite the star on the back side. So both Rabbi Yirmiya and Rav Huna are agreeing. Not on a get makusher, you are signing on the back side of the star. And Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba says, achori haksav, ukineged haksav. You're signing on the back side of the document, opposite the text. So watch this, Rabbi Yirmiya says, digmar v'lechosh, dilma ksiv megavoy, mai devoy, umachtim sahadi yisiri ma'avray. Rabbi Yirmiya, now, when we envision what Rabbi Yirmiya means, what do we envision? So on the front side of the document, what do you have? You have the text. Then on the back side of the document, what do you have? The signatures of the witnesses. Now, what we assume is that the signatures of the witnesses are written in the same direction of the text. So witness one, witness two, witness three. Now, we assume that what happens over here, that we align those signatures in accordance with what? With the actual size of the text. So witness number one begins with line number one of the text, and witness number three ends up with line number three of the text. That's the assumption we're dealing with over here. So says the Gemara, at the end of the day, perhaps if somebody wants to forge a document, what could they do? Add some more text on the front side of the document, and what? And what? Just add more witnesses on the back side. So as long as the assumption is, as long as you have witnesses opposite the text, so then you're going to be good. So meaning this leaves me open to a forgery. Let me add on more text on the front end, sign more witnesses on the back end, but doesn't it raise our antenna that what? That you have more than three. You have more than three. Remember, get mokusha only needs three witnesses. Why do you have more than three witnesses? I just wanted more witnesses, right? I'm looking to give out more kibudim. Right? So we'll say, now, by the way, there would be a good reason why somebody could say they'd want more witnesses, which is why. We'll say, remember, if you're engaging in a transaction, remember, not a divorce right now, but in a regular transaction, a person will want more edim because, remember, the more edim, the greater the kol. Sometimes you may have a vested interest in greater publicity for this particular transaction, and therefore, for again, a person could forge the document, add on text, add on additional signatures, and just say that he wanted more edim. Listen to this, we'll say, this is amazing. Amrlei, mi savris edim kisidron chasimi? So do you think that when Rabbi Yirmiya says that the witnesses sign achori aksav ukineged aksav, do you think that they're signing along the same lines, literally, along the same lines as the text? In other words, we have this issue in Rabbi Osai, that you have the text of the document, you turn the document over, and you have the witnesses signing in accordance with the actual text. That's not how they sign. Rabbi Osai, this is amazing. The Gemara says, "Misarvis edim kisidron chasimi." No, they don't sign, Rabbi Osai, along the same lines of the text. Rather, edim mimata lemala chasimi. Rabbi Osai, this is amazing. According to Rabbi Yirmiya, we have the witnesses sign perpendicular to the text. Rabbi Osai, now what does this mean? This is an incredible chap. Perpendicular text, what does it mean, Rabbi Osai? So what you do is you have the front side of the text, you have the text. You turn the document over, the witnesses sign their name from the last line of the text going up to the top of the text. So Rabbi Osai, so their signature begins at the last line. So they're signing perpendicular to the text, right? Am I being clear?
Yeah.
Right, so if this is the text, I know this is very helpful. My air drawings, right? If this is the text, so again, good. All right, so good. So then they're just signing perpendicular to the text. Good. But the chap over here is that their signature, the first letter of their first name begins where? Begins where? On the last line of the text. Therefore, Rabbi Osai, what happens? What happens? If you were to try to go ahead and what? If you were to try to go ahead and add in more text, the forgery is clear. Why? Why? Because Lamaisa, again, there's more text extending now below the first letter of the first name. And therefore the forgery is good. We'll say it's really incredible. So the Gemara says the following. But one second. So fine. You've taken care now of the ability, or I should say, you have now prevented the adding of additional text. You can't add more text into a get mokosher. Why? Because the Maisa, again, the addition is going to be clearly visible, because it's going to extend past the first letter of the first name of the signatures. However, again, says the Gemara, V'leichosh Dilma, Misramya Re'usei B'shita Achrona, the Gai is Le'i B'shita Achrona. Let's say this, Let's say one of the parties to the shtar doesn't like the information contained in the last line of the shtar. So what does he want to do? He's going to cut out the last line of the shtar. So says the Gemara, that still won't work. The guy is lay Reuven. So we'll say, now you'll say to yourself, well, of course it's not going to work. Because we'll say, let's imagine for a moment that the one of the witnesses is Reuven ben Yaakov. So we'll say, so what's going to happen? If he cuts out let me go back. We've established now that you can't go ahead and add on text to a get mokosha, at least going to Rabbi Yomi Bar Abba, because then the text will extend past the names of the Edim, and it's a clear addition. What happens if one of the parties wants to cut out the last line? Now, Bossy, here's the problem. If he cuts out the last line, what does he end up cutting out? Reuven, one of the names of the witnesses. Says Gemara, that's okay. The guy is a Reuven Bade, Umiskasher Beben Yaakov. Oh, so maybe he'll say like this, that if he cuts, what's to stop him from cutting out the last line of the text? Ah, you're going to say, well, the big problem is he's cutting out the name of the eighth, Reuven. That's okay, I will say. Because what's still left? What's still left? Yeah. Ben Yaakov. Right? And after all, we learned, I will say, going back to our Gittin days, we learned this nan, Ben Ish Ploni Eid Kasher. I will say, at the end of the day, if you sign a shtar, if a person were to sign a shtar, Ben Ish Ploni, right? If you were to sign Ben, your father's name, Eid, that indeed would be a kosher signature. That would be a valid edus. So we'll say, so in this case over here, what's to stop someone from forging the document? Now again, by simply what? Cutting out, this all assumes that there's something in the last line you want cut out. So if you cut out the last line, you're going to take out the first name of the witness. That's okay, because you can still uphold the shtar by having it say what? Ben Reuven Eid, to which the Gemara says, it's not Ben Ish Ploni Eid Kosher, Tichsiv Reuven Ben Bechad Dara V'Yakov Eid Iluvei. To which the Gemara says, no. The way we have the witnesses sign of Osai is the following. If we go ahead and we have the witnesses sign is Reuven Ben is in one line. When we say one line of Osai, remember, this is still going on Miriam Bar Abba's perpendicular signatures. So Reuven Ben corresponds to one line of text. Yaakov Eid corresponds to another line of text. Therefore, if you were to go ahead and cut out the last line of text, you're not just taking out Reuven. What else are you taking out? Ben. So we'll say at that point in time, again, you would be left with nothing, right? I mean, you'd be left with the father's name, Eid, and halacha l'maaseh, so it would be clear that somebody's trying to forge or somebody's trying to alter the document. Belechosh, says the Belechosh, Dilma, Gai is le Reuven Ben, umiskasher biyakov Eid. But I don't understand. So let's go with this. So let's say now you're writing Reuven Ben on one line. Someone's coming along and tampering with the shtarabos, so they're cutting out the last line. So they remove now Reuven Ben. Fine. But why can't you be machshir the document with what? With Yaakov Eid. After all, this nan, Ish Ploni Eid Kosher. The rabbis say this is not preferable, but halacha lemaisa, if somebody goes ahead and writes their first name, right? Reuven, or as you say, Yaakov, and puts Eid, technically speaking, the get is going to be kosher. But now take a look at the Rashbam. There's an important caveat to this. It's four lines up from the bottom. Ben Ish Ploni Eid Kosher. Me'acher shemakirin shezek sav yodo shel oso ben ploni. Rabosai, now you could only sign Yaakov Eid if two criteria. Of course, criteria number one is that your name is Yaakov. Right? Criteria number two is that, bless you, is that they're able to recognize your signature. So the Gemara says, what the Gemara says is just trying to point out is the Gemara thought that we had a forge or a tamper-proof shtar. How do you have a tamper-proof shtar? By having the Eidim sign in a perpendicular fashion, to which the Gemara says, "Well, not necessarily, because you could still cut out that last name, even though you're taking out the first name of the Eid, and what going ahead and even though we wanted to say write Reuven and Ben on the same line, still you could go ahead and the Gemara is positing you could still go ahead and have the shtar be kosher with just Yaakov Eid. After all, we learned that halacha lemaisa, if somebody signs on a shtar with just his name and Eid, and you're able to uphold his signature, such a document ultimately works. To which the Gemara says, the following. So let me just finish this train of thought. To which the Gemara says, "Umiskash this not ish ploni eid kasher delo kasev eid." To which the Gemara says, "What's the case over here where we didn't write eid?" So Rabbi said, the case over here is all there is a name. So in this case over here, Rabbi said, the way it was signed was Reuven ben Yaakov. So Rabbi said, in a case like this, if you were to go ahead and lop off the last line of the shtar, which contains what? Which contains Reuven ben, all you would be left with is what? Yaakov, and no aid, and therefore the shtar would not be kosher. To which the Gemara says, or it could even be in a case where aid is written. But this is a case where what? The adinan ba daha chasimas yada lav amadeis lav diakovu. The Rabbi say the case over here is where what? We know that the signature is not the signature of Yaakov. So Rabbi say, by the way, you understand, the bottom line is, and this is just an important mindset if they're going into the sugya, which is Rabbi say, if somebody wants to cheat, and if somebody wants to go ahead and tamper with the shtar, and they have a singular goal to do that. So say if a person wants to cheat in a transaction, you know, the system cannot protect against every single type of forgery and against every single type of cheating. You can't do it. If somebody mamish is like a dedicated rami, if somebody's a dedicated rasha, if somebody's a dedicated cheat, the system can't protect against them. All the system could do is create a general mechanism that is able to prevent most forms of forgery. But there is no system in place that is perfect to prevent everything. To which the Gemara says, so here's what we've got. What we've got over here, lemaisa, is the following. With the perpendicular signatures, at least what we have, Rabbi say, is a pretty good system. A pretty good system that says, number one, that's what? That if you add on, what it does, number one, is it prevents the add-on of text. That's what we've established. You can't add any more text, because if you add any more text, then what? It's going to be clear that there's text that extends beneath the first letter of the first name of the eighth. That's a clear add-on. Can a person go ahead and manipulate the shtar by lopping off the last line and still upholding the shtar through the signatures that are present? The answer is, technically, yes. Because even if you were to lop off the last line, and even though now we're saying that in one line of text it's Reuven ben, could you be Mekayim Mishtar ultimately again through Yaakov 8? The answer on a technical level is yes. But Lemaisa, again, at least this perpendicular signature is a good mechanism to at least avoid some forms of tamper. But the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, V'dilma b'shmei da'avuach asam. Maybe, Rabbi said, maybe what's happening over here is the following. Maybe, look at the Rashbam, top Rashbam, second line down. V'dilma b'shmei da'avuach, Yaakov chasam Reuven, v'chei min hago lichtom l'chvot aviv. Rabbi said, maybe the particular aid ultimately is signing the name of Satan. In other words, the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following. If somebody tampers with the shtar, and they go ahead and they lop off Reuven ben, and all you're left with is Yaakov 8. So the Gemara is saying, well, we know that that's not Yaakov's signature. The Gemara says, you're right. Maybe it's whose signature? It's Reuven, the son's signature. But why is Reuven signing his father's name? To which the Gemara suggests, it's a covet. It's a sign of respect and honor to his father. Look at the Rashbam again. Yaakov chasam Reuven. Excuse me. The Dilma b'shmei avua Yaakov chasam Reuven. Maybe Reuven signed his father's name, dechein min hago lichtom lichvod aviv. Well, see, this is very helpful also with check cashing and many different things. Right? It's a sign of covet, right? And potential revenue if he goes ahead and he signs his father's name. But I will say, but the point over here is, maybe we're suggesting the following. See, the Gemara was suggesting, the Gemara answered that you can't be machshir this shtar with Yaakov 8. Why? Because we know for a fact that what? This is not Yaakov's signature. Tush Gemara says, Inachinami, maybe it's not Yaakov's signature. It's Reuven's signature. But Reuven, why are you signing your father's name? To which the Gemara says, as a display of covet for his father. As a sign of covet, the son sublimates his identity to that of his father and ultimately signs with his father's name. To which the Gemara says, no. Lo shavik inish shmei didei, v'chase b'shmei davua. The Bible says, a person does not go ahead and forsake his own name to sign in the name of his father. The Bible says, there's a lot of incredible profundity in this as well, which is lemaisa, again, as much as a son wants to be mechabed his father, it's exceptionally important for a son to have his own distinct identity. And I will say, it's interesting. Rav Soloveitchik points this out on a totally separate level. He points out again in Hilchos Avelos, the Rav makes an amazing observation. The Rav says that if you look at the laws of Avelos, the longest mourning period that we have in halacha is for a parent. Right? Avelus for a parent goes on, right? Kaddish is for 11 months, but Avelus goes on for an entire year. Yet, again, for every single other type of loss, a person loses a spouse, a person chashom loses a child, sibling, 30 days. Shloshim and the Avelus is done. And the Rav says it's so interesting, it's so counterintuitive, because the loss of a parent, right, as painful as it may be, is also the most natural loss. Right? In the world of losses, we always hope that it's parents, it's children who bury parents, and never chas v'shalom the opposite. Every other loss has the potential ultimately to be traumatic. Yet it's, so the Rav says something amazing. The Rav says because on a Judaic level, he says that the loss of a parent is spiritually one of the most traumatic losses. Why? Because when a parent dies, and the individual loses a certain part of their identity as well. Meaning the first part of our identity is that we are known as so-and-so's child. That's the first part of our persona. Then as we grow up, we begin to develop our own identity as well. Therefore, the Rav says there's always a part of the identity of the child that is interwoven into the parent. And again, even on a Masorah level, our parents represent our Masorah, our link in the Masorah, our link back to Har Sinai. So when a person loses a parent, they lose a little bit of themselves as well, and there's a certain spiritual trauma that exists there that does not exist by other types of losses. So let's point this out over here. The Gemara says, it could be that, does a son want to be mechabed his father? Absolutely. But a son is never going to and should never abdicate his own identity and assume the identity of the father in order to mechabed the father. So a son is not going to sign in the name of his father because, again, not appropriate, not healthy. He's not going to give up his own identity for the identity of the father. Incredible yisod. So the Gemara is supposed to say something amazing. V'dilma, simna ba'amahu d'shav. Rabbi said, this is amazing. See, right, maybe what he's doing is the following. Maybe the son is taking the father's name and he's using his father's name as a simon. In other words, Rabbi said that what it's saying over here is that comes along Reuven ben Yaakov, and Reuven ben Yaakov says, you know what, as we're going to in just a little bit, there are some people, Rabbi said, who their signatures were symbols. So maybe Reuven ben Yaakov is going to take his father's name, Yaakov, and not sign in his father's name, but rather what? Utilize his father's name as his symbol, as his signet. This is how I, Reuven ben Yaakov, sign. My symbol is Yaakov. After all, the Gemara. So we have precedent for this. The Gemara says, Daha Rav Tsayer Kura. Rav Rabose used to sign. His signature was a fish. He would make a picture of a fish. And this, everyone knew when you saw the fish, this was Rav's signature. Rabbi Chanina Tsayer Charusa. Rabbi Chanina used to go ahead and he used to draw a date palm. A date palm. This was his signature. Rav Chista Sanich. Rav Chista used to just sign a big samach, right? That was his signature. Rav Hoshia Ayin. Rav Hoshia used to sign an Ayin. Rav Baravuna Makusa. And Rav Baravuna, we'll say, ultimately, they change it over here to Rabba, I believe. Rav Baravuna. Rav Baravuna used to go ahead, we'll say, and Makusa. We'll say, Makusa is the mast of a ship. The mast of a ship. Rabbi said, I'll just say something interesting. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Rabbi said, the point the Gemara is making over here is you see that people used to sign not with their names, but they used to have a symbol. Now, Rabbi said, look at the Rashbam. Rav Tzair Kura, Tzuras Hatak Haya Oseh Bishtaras, B'mokom Chasimaso. So ultimately, again, he would often go ahead and make the picture of a fish when signing a document, and this was in lieu of his actual signature. Ukvaya Duli Olam, Shezeu Chasimaso, and ultimately, again, when you saw that fish, and again, I guess he drew the fish in a particular way as well, that was the chasima, that was the signature of Rav. And both said, I watched this. Now, obviously, what's the obvious kasha? What's the obvious kasha? Why a fish? Right, why a fish? Rebosan, I understand a little bit like the Samech of Chista, Rav Chista, I understand. The Ayin of Rav Oshia, I understand. Rebosan, Rav Barafuna, the master of the ship, why? Rav Barafuna was wealthy. Rav Barafuna was wealthy. The Pashtos, again, he must have moved merchandise through ships. So you understand. So look at what Rashbam says. So you're asking, why did Rav use the fish? Rav Mefarish Tam, Amai Tzir Kura, Vicharusa. So remember, there are two of them that are interesting. So Rav used to draw a fish, and Rav Chanina used to draw a date palm. So we'll say the Rashbam says, and those who try to explain, by Mefarish Tam, I might see Kura Vicharusa, Eina Ela Toa. If you think there's some deeper meaning to the fish or to the date palm, you're mistaken. Vishema Ashem Maaseyam, Because the Rashbam says it can be very simple. Zen nahag le'echol dogim. Right? After all, Rav used to like to eat fish. V'zeh nahag b'tmarim. And Rav Chanina used to like dates. V'simna ba'alma hayu osim. And ultimately, again, Rabbi Osai, in other words, what is the Rashbam saying? And Rabbi Osai, another profound yisod. Not everything has a deeper meaning. Not everything. Rabbi Osai, by the way, this is exceptionally important. Because, you know, sometimes, I'll tell you where this comes up all the time. This comes up in the realm of the interpersonal dialogue. Sometimes someone says something. And Rabbi Osai, you know, it's an amazing thing. That sometimes, you know, Chazal tell us, Chacham Mizoro B'divrech, you know, be careful with your words, but you know, sometimes you have a conversation with a person, and people read into everything. We'll say sometimes in life, what a person says is just what they mean. Sometimes there's no deeper meaning. Sometimes there's no hidden agenda. Sometimes, you know, pass the salt just means pass the salt. It doesn't mean, you know, I feel bitter. I feel a little acidic. I need a preservative in life. I don't like pepper. Sometimes what you say is just what we'll say. It's an incredible yisod. Because as people, as Jews, we're always looking for deeper meaning in everything. By the way, this is very helpful in marriage also. Right? Because sometimes a lot of shalom bayis problems are caused because one spouse, and I'm not identifying which one it may be, but often it's not the male, right? Sometimes goes ahead and intuits or interprets certain things that the other spouse may be saying, and it's not really what they mean. But what the Gemara is saying is, on one hand, we're always looking, all kidding aside, we're always looking for deeper meaning in everything in life, but sometimes you have to not look for such deeper meaning and just take things at their surface value. So the Rashbam says over here, before you start trying to figure out, well, why is Rav signing with a fish, and why is Rabbi Hanina signing with a date palm, Rav might have just liked fish, and Rabbi Hanina might have just liked dates. There doesn't have to be a deeper meaning to everything. This is just how they chose to sign. So what's I say? The Gemara to go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara is suggesting maybe, in fact, Reuven is signing, his signature is Yaakov. But not that he is taking his father's name and using that as his identity, but rather what? He's converting his father's name into what? Into a symbol. Into a symbol, and therefore Reuven signs with the symbol. Because we'll say what's important in this list of different signatures is, remember, you have Rav Chisda using a samech, meaning people also didn't just use images as symbols, but they also use letters as symbols, to which the Gemara says, Lo chatzif inish l'shavye l'shmei da'avu asimno. So we'll say, the Gemara answers, a person would not have the chutzpah to make his father's name into a symbol. The act of making your father's name into a symbol is considered to be chutzpah. And ultimately, again, one would not do it. I must say, I saw actually right before davening this morning, I saw brought down the name of the Maharam Shif, that the post can bring down, that this is only a din in a father, that a son would use his mother's name as a symbol. In other words, I must say, this goes back to the Yira Kavod dialectic. That when it comes to parents, Rabbi Osai, the assumption is a person fears his father more than he fears his mother, right? But he is mechabed his mother more than he is mechabed his father. Rabbi Osai, that's why when the Torah discusses kibud and yira, so the Torah says again, ish imo va'aviv tiro. Torah goes out and says you have to fear your mother because it's not instinctive to fear the mother, but yeah, it says kabed es avicha, honor your father, because it's instinctive to honor your mother. So the Maharam Shif actually brings out something very interesting. The Gemara assumes a person is never going to have the chutzpah to go ahead and use their father's name as a symbol for their signature, because that would be a lack of yira. But the Maharam Shif said it would be normal for a person to use their mother's name as a symbol for their signature. All right, so again, we're still trying to figure out, Lamaisa, how are we signing on the back of the Get Mekosher? Marzucha comes on, Marzucha says, Marzucha Amar, Lama Lecha Kulei Hai. Why are you going in all of these directions? Kal Mekosher She'en Eidav Kala B'Shita Achos, Pasol. I will say, Marzucha says like this. Marzucha says, see, Rabbi Osai, this is actually a very interesting Havamina. The Havamina is that when we spoke about the signatures of the witnesses, Lav dafka that they all have to line up. Marzucha Rabbi Yossi advances a very interesting shita. Marzucha says that the spacing of the names of the witnesses must all be the same. The spacing must work, that they all the signatures must begin. Again, this is still in the perpendicular model. The signatures must begin, right? So we're writing perpendicularly. The first letter of the last name, the first letter of the first name must begin where? At the last line of text. And the last letter of the signature, which Rabbi Yossi would be what? Would be the Dalit of Aid, must end by the first line of text. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi, all of the signatures must line up exactly this way. So Rabbi Yossi says like this. Rabbi Yossi, if it turns out that's what? If it turns out that some... Now, again, at the end of the day, if it turns out that somebody lops off a line of the text, and therefore Rabbi Yossi, either you're left with what? Ben the father, or even not the father, but just name and aid. Razucha says like this. The fact that you might have some people who would sign Ben their father, and the fact that you might have some people who would sign is what? Just their name and aid, that could happen. To have three people do that, that doesn't happen. So Razucha says, because you have to line up all of these signatures in the same way. I will say, by the way, you see this sometimes like in a ksuva. This requires like a little bit of chachma with spacing. Sometimes you have like the more artistic ksuvas. So it's like, depending on the names of the chosin and kala, so the sofer will have to stretch out certain letters. Right? Take a seat to Reb Chaim about this. We'll have to stretch out certain letters to allow the, what's the word? Textual symmetry to remain intact.
Justification.
Oh, good, rather justification. Good. So we'll say, so too over here, Marzucha is going to say, you need that same symmetry by the signatures. If somebody's lopping off something and everybody, and you have three witnesses signing Ben their father, or just their name and aid, already your antenna go up. So in other words, so therefore Marzucha says, this is a fail safe against any kind of forgery. So we'll say, therefore it works in all directions. You can't add on text. Why not? Because again, it's going to be below the signatures. That's the easy one, right? So you can't add on below the text because it's clear if you add on, the signatures only begin above that additional text. That's clear. And if you start lopping off stuff and you have strange kind of signatures, like just Ben the father or just the name Aid, if you have three signatures like that, already you know that something is up. So therefore, Mazutra says, any Makusha Rabbosai, where the signatures don't begin on the same line and end on the same line, ultimately is going to be possible. I'm going to say, so we'll say, you could take a look in the Rashba Marzutra. We're not going to go into it now. So this is the Gemara. We'll say, let's do one more piece for today. I'm going to be Yitzchak, Bar Yosef, Rabbi Yochanan. Kala machakin kulan tzark sheyichtov. So we'll say, we're going back for just a moment. Now that what we've established is, it appears that everyone is agreeing that Lemaisa, again, the witnesses are signing on the back side of the Get Makusher. What we've also established, Rabbi Yossi, is it seems to be that Rami Bar Chama's approach, at least according to Marzutra, seems to be the most compelling, that namely on a Get Makusher, the witnesses are signing perpendicular to the text, and therefore, again, Halacha Lemaisa, preventing any kind of forgery. Then Rabbi Yossi, we're taking a step back. The Braisa before mentioned the idea of erasures. What we established is Rabbi Yossi, that any time there's an erasure where, by Hakol Shara Vekayom, our antenna goes up and something is not, meaning, what the Gemara said is, any time that there's an erasure, by Hakol Shara Vekayom, what do we say? The Shara is automatically puzzled. Shara is automatically puzzled. Which Rabbi Yossi tells us that other types of erasures would be okay. So we're gonna talk about this now for just a moment. Rabbi Yochanan, kala machkin. Rabbi Yossi, any time you have some kind of erasure in a text, kulan tzarech sheyichtov v'din kiyumehen. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef says, Rabbi Yochanan, anytime you have an erasure in the shtar, so we'll say ultimately there must be some type of certification for that erasure. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at the Rashbam. Kalamachkin, with this we're going to stop for today. Kalamachkin kulan tzarek sheyichtov kiyumehen. So the Rashbam says, v'lo gar sinon v'din uperish kalamachkin she'inon b'makum shor v'kayim. So we'll say, as long as whenever you have erasures that are not in the place where it says shor v'kayim. So we'll say, remember again, shor v'kayim, you can't have any erasure. So anytime you have an erasure, that's not by akol shor v'kayim, she'inon mikuyamin iko l'meimar she'machak v'ziyef. So what's saying is the following. We're going to expound on this more tomorrow. which is the following: that essentially, we'll say it must have been very common to have erasures in a shtar. Right? Remember again, a sofer is writing something. Could be somebody gives him the wrong information, or it could be something changes in the metzias of the shtar as the shtar is being written. Let's say, I'll tell you afterwards. Right? So it could be that there are many changes. The idea is the following: you can make erasures in a shtar. But Rabbi, what has to happen is the following. What has to happen is there has to be an itemized list of all of the changes in the shtar made at the bottom of the document before Hakol Sharir V'Kayim. Because Rabbi say, understand, otherwise, if you don't have an itemized list of all erasures, then what could happen, Rabbi say? As long as you're not erasing Hakol Sharir V'Kayim, what could you do? You can go back and edit any part of the shtar you want. So what has to happen, as we will see more tomorrow, is that you go ahead and you erase, you change, that's fine, you make a little asterisk. That asterisk corresponds to a list at the bottom of the shtar. And again, you write in the bottom of the shtar a full itemized list of all changes that took place at the shtar, and then you put Hakol Sharir V'Kayim. At that point, then I will say what that does is, anything that's listed there is a certified change. But if there's some additional change I find in the shtar that is not in that itemized list, then what Rabbi was saying, then it is clear that ultimately, again, that is going to be a forgery, and therefore will invalidate the shtar. So we'll stop over here for today. Shkayach, we'll continue with the halachas of shtar, Zemir HaShem. Why does that make Hashem?